Veterans salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor. Bloomberg headline. This is Bloomberg Europe. EU's new defense plan aims to boost European military purchases. Subhead, the European Commission is set to unveil a new strategy. Subhead, the Commission paper will be unveiled in the coming weeks. I go to Joseph Sternberg, member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He writes political economics column. He's based in London. Who anticipated this in his column of several days past, that what we're looking at here is Europe adjusting itself to a mandate, a recommendation, a suggestion that's been in place since 2014, the famous 2% number. There's more to it than that. Question is this real or is this the European Commission? Joe, a very good evening to you. Because you've done the footwork here about where the 2% number came from and also looking at the plans of the Europeans now. This is the EU talking, not NATO talking, the EU talking. Is this a credible catch-up that they're producing, or are they having to build from scratch to start factories all over again? Good evening to you, Joe.
Hey, John. I mean, the point is that Europe wants its defense spending and its militaries to be credible in a way that they perhaps haven't always cared about in the way that they ought to. And I think that this is a development that's worth paying attention to in the U.S. So, I mean, the backstory here is that really since the end of the Cold War, America has been complaining that Europeans were not pulling their weight for military expenditure within the context of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization or NATO. I mean, the Europeans spent on defense during the Cold War when they were on the front line, but they thought that the collapse of the Soviet Union and communism in Europe was an excuse to take a holiday from history. And so they shifted a lot of spending out of the military. Capabilities atrophied. And this has been a bipartisan complaint for a long time in Washington. And one of the consequences of that was that America eventually browbeat European allies in the 2000s and again in 2014 into accepting an actual target for defense spending. And the target was that NATO allies were supposed to devote at least 2% of their GDP to military spending. And of the military spending that they did, 20% of it was supposed to go on procurement. This would solve this problem where people would pretend that giving generous pensions to the military band was a substitute for actually buying guns or fighter jets or any, you know, tanks or useful equipment like that. So, and then, of course, as soon as the Europeans agreed to these targets, they didn't stick to them. And that's all changed over the past 2 years. I think that Europe has been genuinely shocked by Russia's invasion of Ukraine and has realized that deterrence matters. And so military spending in Europe is increasing everywhere. It's very noticeable if you look at NATO data. If you look at the number of NATO countries that are now meeting that 2% target, 18 of the now 32 NATO members are on track to hit the 2% target this year. That's up from 11 that hit it last year, three that hit it in 2014. So there's been a lot of progress here. And I think that the key point that's coming into focus is that Washington eventually is going to have to take yes for an answer on this, because at the same time, you still hear a lot of these old complaints in America about Europeans not pulling their weight. And those complaints were current and correct a decade ago. But I think that America needs to update its thinking about what we should be expecting from our European allies and how we can best nudge them in that direction.
In these last hours, to make complicated what could be simple, the headline in the Financial Times, London, Macron says sending Western troops to Ukraine cannot be ruled out. At the same time, we go to the London Telegraph, a headline that is consistent with the NATO part. Ukraine withdraws from two villages near Avdiivka is the battlefield, but the bigger battlefield has to do with Olaf Scholz, who says, the leader of all the Germans, says, Scholz rules out NATO troops to Ukraine. So while we're hearing about the battlefield failures, we're hearing Scholz say nine, and we're hearing Macron shrug. Joe, can we sort this out easily?
Sort of. What was happening is that there was a summit over the past day or so of European leaders. They all got together in Paris in large part to discuss the issue of Ukraine and deterrence and their militaries. Now, the noisiest outcome of that has been the statement from French President Emmanuel Macron that seemed to hint that they were sort of thinking about putting Western troops in Ukraine, or that it was possible, or that you couldn't rule out the possibility that they might sort of think about doing it in the future. I mean, my sense is that this is a distraction, that no one has been seriously thinking about doing this. Macron was not suggesting that they would do it, only that they were not going to say that they wouldn't do it. I think the far more consequential thing that's going on right now is this discussion about military expenditure in Europe and how that should be done. And I think that there were some interesting discussions that seem to have gone on in Paris about issues like if they are ramping up military spending, should they prioritize getting that money out the door quickly by buying equipment that's available off the rack in other parts of the world, such as the U.S., or should they be using that money to develop Europe's own domestic defense industry? And I think that the answer should probably be both of them. Europe does need to rebuild a defense industry that is capable of manufacturing all of the equipment that it's going to need. But for right now, there are very urgent needs to backfill some of the aid that they have shipped to Ukraine. And from that perspective, I think a willingness to abandon industrial policy and buy whatever they can get, wherever they can get it, is very useful. And there does, as far as I can tell, seem to have been a bit of progress on that score. So don't allow some of these more outlandish statements about whether there will or won't be NATO troops in Ukraine to obscure from the fact that they are now engaging in more serious conversations than they've had in many years about what form increased European defense spending should take.
I'm looking especially, Joe, at the history of NATO to understand this resistance in Washington. And I don't have it yet, but there's this. NATO was a treaty from 47-48. That is Harry Truman's time, before he was elected for the first time in 48. It was opposed by the Republicans led by Bob Taft. They were not happy with the Marshall Plan. They were not happy with the NATO treaty. They were not happy with further involvement in Europe. Bob Taft meant to campaign on that for the 52 election. It went to Eisenhower instead, which is a different direction having to do with the Korea War. But the isolationism of 50 is recognizable today in the way the Republican Party is talking about these European commitments. Do you measure, Joe, that the Europeans take into consideration that we have almost a ceremony of isolationism in the U.S. that must be overcome? And it can be overcome. It has been before. It can be again. Or is there despair in Europe?
I think that there is a recognition that there is a real problem developing in Washington around some of these issues. And remember that the latest freakout over the past couple of weeks was prompted by candidate Donald Trump saying essentially that, you know, he would let Russia have any NATO member that wasn't meeting that 2% spending commitment. Yeah. And so I think that there's an awareness that they need to catch up. But I think that there needs to be an awareness in Washington and in Trump circles that Europe is trying to catch up. And so, you know, take yes for an answer and encourage them to lean into the alliance instead of causing them to always worry about America's own reliability as an alliance partner.
Germany in particular, Joe. Scholz's poll numbers are weak right now, and there's some question about his ability to manage the coalition. Germany in itself, so it turned towards Ukraine, turned towards the defense of Europe a year right after the invasion in 22. your sense of it. Is Germany turning away from this commitment? Is Alternative for Deutschland, which is against the U.S., against NATO, against any treaty whatsoever, is that influencing the decision in Berlin?
Well, what's interesting in Germany in this context is that, yes, I mean, you have the large Alternative for Germany party, but I mean, that only accounts for about 20% of support from the electorate. Most of the other 80% support is for parties on all parts of the political spectrum that almost unbelievably seem to be united in support of more defense spending. So Olaf Scholz's promise 2 years ago to pour 100 billion euros into new defense procurement in the coming years seems to be just about the only thing that the coalition government and the main opposition party on the conservative side can agree on right now. And, you know, I think that this is a remarkable development because, as you and I have discussed in recent months, Germany is right now in the middle of a really bruising budget battle to do with green subsidies and how they're going to pay their energy bills. And yet the one thing that they don't want to touch is this defense procurement fund. And I think that that signifies that there has been a shift in the way that Europeans are thinking about security and the role that they need to play in their own security.
The defense minister of the Tory government in London, Grant Shapps, has said there will be no UK deployment to Ukraine. Is this a hot topic in London, or was that an add-on because of this remark by Macron and didn't gain attention?
Again, it's all because of Macron's comment. No one was seriously talking about putting any troops from NATO allies on the ground in Ukraine before Macron gave that press conference. No one is seriously talking about doing it now. It isn't even obvious that Macron himself was talking about doing it. So I think that there is an awareness that the Western commitment to Ukraine will not extend that far, but it also doesn't need to. The thing that they need to, and the only thing that Ukraine is asking for, are the weapons deliveries. And I think that a lot of the spending debate that Europe is engaging in now is in large part about where they find the resources to meet that need, and they do seem to be committed to doing it.
And the opinion in London of the U.S. Congress and the isolationists, are they confident that it can be overcome or will be overcome as it has before?
Well, I think that there is a lot of concern about that because certainly the mood in Washington is a lot more isolationist on these issues than it's been in quite a few decades. So there is concern about that. And I think that it would be a real shame and a terrible mistake on America's part for the U.S. to start pulling away from NATO at exactly the moment that we have finally goaded our European partners into doing their part. Because if we maintain our commitment to NATO at the same time that they are increasing theirs, this is an amazing opportunity for the U.S. to work with its European partners to try to recreate stability in Europe against a lot of the threats that are facing the region.
Joseph Sternberg, a member of the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal. He's based in London. He writes political economics. We turn to something that Joe's helping me understand, which is the general attitude in the United Kingdom that with a recession at hand, it's time to raise taxes? Question mark. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.
Truth is, Ohio, when it comes to broccoli salad, you got the secret ingredient on lock. Miracle Whip. You know it, your neighbors know it. Heck, everyone from Toledo to Portsmouth knows it. That tangy zip of Miracle Whip is the reason why Ohio's broccoli salad runs circles around everybody else's and never gets winded. So here's to you for keeping it bold, keeping it zippy, and keeping Miracle Whip right where it belongs, in all your favorite recipes. Buy Miracle Whip at your local grocery store and get your tang on, Ohio.
This time of year, most of us are checking off our holiday gift lists. But identity thieves have lists too, and your personal information might be on them. Protect your identity with LifeLock. LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second and alerts you to threats you could miss. If your identity is stolen, LifeLock will fix it, guaranteed, or your money back. Make this season about joy, not identity theft, with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. Terms apply.
Coda salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of Coda's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use Coda Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on Coda. Plan your ride and learn more at Coda.com/trip planner.